When it strikes true. He faced the crowd. Sisters, brothers of the Grey Helms, there are many gods of war. We have crossed half this world, and we cannot deny the thousand faces, the thousand masks worn by that grim bringer of strife. We have seen mortals kneel before idols and statues, before the likeness of a boar, a striped tiger, or two wolves. We have heard the cries upon the battlefield. He paused and half smiled, as if remembering. The field of battle, yes. By those beseeching cries alone, we might imagine that the greatest god of war is named Mother. He held up his hands again to stay his listeners. I meant no disrespect, dear kin. I speak only to find what sets us apart from all those other blood-soaked cults. What do they seek there in violent battle, those savage faiths? Why, they seek death, the death of their enemies, and if death must come to themselves, then they pray it is a brave one, a glorious one. He strode past Krughava, was pleased to see her step aside, and faced Ikarl and the others. Scores of faces, eyes fixed upon him now, eyes that slipped over the mortal sword as if she had ceased to exist. He could not believe the suddenness, the sheer immensity of this usurpation. She was fatally weakened. There in the adjunct's command tent, she sought to show none of it, and hid it well indeed. Yet all I needed to do was prod just once, and see what has happened. Tavare, your denial broke Krughava, and Krughava was a woman for whom trust was everything. How could I have not heard the splintering of her spine right then and there? How could I not have understood the moment when she grasped the notion of strategy, of tactics, and made bold her renewed zeal? It was desperate. No matter. But we are not the same as the others. We are not simply one cult of war among many. It is not glory we seek, not in our name at least. It is not even the death of our enemies that so gladdens us, filling our drunken nights with bravado. We are too somber for such things. It is not in us to swagger and bluster. War, my brothers, my sisters, is the only weapon we have left. To defend the wilds. I tell you, I would defy Runthervian's last words. Betray the wolves? No, never. And the day of our battle, when we stand free upon the corpses of our fellow humans, when we have delivered once more the wildness upon all the world, well, then I shall bow to the wolves. And I shall with humility step aside, for it is not our glory that we seek. He swung to stare at Krughava. It never was. Facing the others again. Must we then fall upon our own swords? No. For as I said earlier, there is no such thing as a final war. One day we shall be called upon again. That is the only certainty we need to recognize. Brothers, sisters, are you sworn to the wolves of winter? The roar that answered his question rocked him back a step. Recovering, he spun round, marched up to Krughava. Mortal sword, I sought you out to ask you about Commander Erekala and the fleet. You chose him, but I must know, is he a loyal servant to the wolves, or does he worship you? He might as well have slapped her. Yes, I do this before witnesses. All the public slights you visited upon me, at last I can deliver the same to you. How does it feel? Krughava straightened. Erekala is most devout, sir. The fleet should have arrived, he said, blockading the harbour and so isolating the spire, yes? She nodded. And there they await us.
Yes, Shield Anvil.
Mortal sword, will you return to the fold? Will you lead us in the war to come? Our need for you... She lifted her eyes, silenced him with their icy regard. A sneer curled her lips.
is clearly past, Shield Anvil.
She turned to the crowd. I relinquish the title of Mortal Sword to the wolves. In my vow to the adjunct, I seem to have betrayed you all. So be it, sirs. Let it be written that the betrayal, so forewarned by Destrient Runthervian, belonged not to the Perish Grey Helms, but to Mortal Sword Krughava. The crime is mine and mine alone.
Gods, the supreme egoism of this creature. Even in defeat, she will stand upon the mound alone. I divest her of everything. I drive the knife into her very heart. And now she is suddenly transformed into a figure of breathtaking tragedy. How does she manage it? Every time.
How it shall be written, he said in a loud voice, remains to be decided. Should you rediscover your faith, Krughava? She bared her teeth.
Should you discover your humanity, Tanakalian? Should you find the courage, who knows where, to see the crisis in your own soul, then do come to me. Until then, I shall ride alone.
He snorted. And will you raise your own tent, too? Cook your own breakfast?
I have ever given thanks to my brothers and sisters, Shield Anvil, for such kindnesses as they volunteer.
She cocked her head.
I wonder how long before doing the same slips from your mind, Tanakalian.
As she walked away, he turned to the tent.
Here, my children, shall I help you with that?
Usurpation?
Krughava swept past Spax, flung her helm into a corner of the tent, and followed it with her gauntlets.
I would drink, Highness.
Abrustel gestured savagely, and Spax shook himself, went over to collect a jug.
Woman, you have the right of it. Get drunk, and then come to my bed. I vow to make you forget all your ills.
The stern woman regarded the Barghast with a measuring stare, as if contemplating his offer. Spax felt sudden sweat upon the small of his back. He quickly poured out a goblet and handed it to her. Queen Abrustel sank back into the heap of cushions.
Well, that didn't take long.
Krughava's eyes flashed.
If I am too shameful in your eyes, Highness, oh, be quiet and drink that down.
Spax, be ready to pour her another. I was but musing out loud, Mortal Sword, on my sense of the adjuncts.
Ha! And if it pleases, I am no longer Mortal Sword.
No, none of this can be cast at Tavore's feet.
By all the river gods, woman, sit down and drink. In other words, be quiet. Leave me to do all the talking.
What of me, fire hair?
Should the miraculous moment ever arrive when you can say something of value, Spax of the Gilk, be sure to leap right in. Meanwhile, I return to my point. The adjunct. I can't even guess at the manner of it, but clearly she somehow managed to bind you all to her until the day of the parley when she went and tore it all apart. Thus, not long, you see. What she made, she then unmade, and I do wonder at her appalling sense of timing.
Krughava's eyes were level above the rim of the goblet.
Highness, what did you make of her?
Spax, hand me that damned jug if all you can do is stare. No, give it to me. Throw yourself down by the curtain. We might need to wipe our feet by the time the night's done. Now, the adjunct. Krughava, I swear I will have you weeping, or whatever else I can wring from you. To hold it all inside, as I see you doing, will kill you.
Tavore Paran, Highness.
Abrastel sighed, watching Spax settle down near the curtain.
I miss the Cundril, she muttered.
She blinked and then looked away, seemed to study one of the thick tapestries hanging from the tent frame. Spax squinted at it. Some faded coronation scene, figures stiff as statues, the kind of formality that spoke of artistic incompetence or the absurdity of genius.
He could never make up his mind over such things. It's just a stupid circlet of gold and silver and whatnot. It's just a stupid proclamation of superiority. Look at all the bowed heads. Where's the real message here? Why, it's with those guards lining the walls and the swords under their hands. It is difficult, Abrastel said, frowning still at the tapestry. Where does loyalty come from? What causes it to be born? What lifts one person above all the others so that one chooses to follow her or him? Is it nothing but our own desperation? Is it, as the Cundrill say, that vast crow's wing stretching over us? Do we yearn for the shelter of competence, real or imagined, true or delusional? Spax cleared his throat.
In times of crisis, Fireherr, even the smallest group of people will turn their heads, finding one among them. When we have no answers, we look to one who might. And that hope is born of qualities observed, of clearest thought, of wisdom or bold courage, all that each of us wishes to reflect.
Krukhava shifted to regard Spax, but said nothing.
Reflect, is it?
Abrastel grunted, drank down a mouthful of wine. Is this queen a mirror? Is that all I am? Is that all you are, War Chief Spax? A mirror for your people?
In many ways, yes. But in looking into that mirror, they ever choose, I think, to see only what they want to see.
Sir, rumbled Krugava to Spax, you invite an untenable position. For all who would command, who would take the lead, from the smallest band of warriors to the vastest empire.
She scowled at her goblet and held it out to Abrastel, who leaned forward to refill it.
Among the perish, upon nights overcast and moonless, 20 hunters each would take to Rath Avaz and row out beyond the fjords. They would light bright lanterns, suspending them on poles out over the black, icy waters. And by that light, they would call from the deeps the three-jawed Nitals, a terrible fish that in vast numbers hunt the Denrabi, and are able to strip those leviathan creatures down to the bones in a single sounding. The Nitals, you see, hunt by the moon's glow, and when they rose to the light, the hunters would spear them.
She fell silent, lids lowering for a time. Spax scratched at the bristle on his jaw, trying to work out the significance of that tale. He glanced at Abrastel, but the queen seemed fixated on the old tapestry.
Those fish would rise to the surface, Krughava said in a voice like gravel under a boot heel, and the light would blind them, freeze them. There was no bravery in slaying them. It was nothing but slaughter, and would only end when the arms and shoulders of the hunters burned like fire, when they could no longer lift their harpoons.
Spax snorted, nodding.
Yes, it does feel like that at times. When I think of the wilds, she continued, as if not hearing him, I think of the Nitals. We humans stand as the brightest light, and before us every living beast of this world freezes in place. My shield anvil has reawakened all the rage in my people, a rage confounded with guilt. We are to be the slaughterers defending the slaughtered. The wolves of war! It is a damned cult, snapped Krughava, and then she shook her head. The savagery of the wolf inspired us. Is that so surprising? But there must be tenets of your faith, Spax persisted, that do indeed cry out for retribution. Delusions, sir. Highness, speak of the adjunct, please.
A most driven woman, Krughava. Desperation and terrible need. But is she a mirror? And if so, what are we all meant to see?
Krughava looked up, studied Abrastel.
The thought alone makes me want to weep, but I know not why. To reflect, said Spax. A mirror is made hard, polished, unflawed.
Find a small wine, Spax, Abrastel growled, This one is done. Krukava, you swore allegiance to the adjunct. Why?
We were troubled. Questions had begun to plague us, especially the destriant and his highest seneschals, those who had given their lives to the philosophy of our religion. We trained to be the weapons of war, you see. But we had begun to wonder if the only gesture of humanity was the one that delivered violence, destruction. We wondered at the seemingly insurmountable might of vengeance, retribution, and righteous punishment. Her eyes were bleak. Is that all we possess? Is there nothing else that might challenge such weapons?
Then, ventured Abrastel, you must have seen something in her, in Tavare Paran.
But Krukava shook her head. All that I knew of her, in that moment when I pledged my service and that of the Grey Helms, all that I knew, well, it came from the visions of the seneschals. The fallen god was damaged, in terrible pain. Like a beast, like any of us, he lashed out at his tormentors. In that, he was more the wolf than we were, or could ever hope to be. Highness, a knife to his throat would be a mercy. For so many, you must understand this, so many had now gathered to feed on his pain, to drink the sweet venom of his fevered blood. More than that, in witnessing his imprisonment and his agony, they felt themselves elevated. It made them feel powerful, and in that power the only currency was cruelty. After all, is that not always our way?
The dreams of the seneschals, Krukava? What did they offer?
The iron-haired woman nodded. An alternative, a way out. In those dreams stood a woman, a mortal woman, immune to all magics, immune to the seduction of the fallen god's eternal suffering. And she held something in her hand. It was small, indeed, so small that our dreamers could not discern its nature, but it haunted them. Oh, how it haunted them.
What was she holding? Abrastel demanded, leaning forward. You must have an idea.
An idea? Oh, hundreds of those, Highness. What she held had the power to free the fallen god. It had the power to defy the gods of war and every other god. It was a power to crush the life from vengeance, from retribution, from righteous punishment. A power to burn away the seduction of suffering itself.
Her eyes glittered in the lantern light.
Can you imagine such a thing?
Spax leaned back.
I have seen her enough times. I see nothing in her hand.
Krukhava had set the cup down. She now sat, her left hand held out, palm up, resting on her knee. She gazed down at it as if seeking to conjure all that she needed.
That, she whispered, is not a mirror, but, oh, how I wish it to be one.
Krukhava, Abrastel said in a low, almost tentative voice, in the moment you stood before her, was there not doubt? Was there not even a single instant of uncertainty?
I thought, in her eyes, so flat, something, and now I wonder. I cannot help but wonder now if all that I thought I saw was nothing more than what I wanted to see.
The hand slowly curled, closed like a dying flower.
The mirror lies.
Those last words shook Spax to his very core. He climbed to his feet, feeling blood rushing into his face.
Then why didn't you accept your shield anvil's argument? Krukava, why are you even here?
With desolate eyes, she looked up at him.
I wanted a just war. I wanted it to be the last war of all wars. I wanted an end. One day the wolves will run only in our memories, our dreams. I do not want to live to see that day.
There was something there, Abrastel insisted, in her hand. Your seers saw it, Krukhava. They saw it. You must find out what it was. For all of us to do this, to do as she bids, for us, Krughava, you must find it.
But I know what it is, Highness. In this moment, I have found my answer. And I see now how I have watched it weaken, how I have watched its light fade from the world. You see the adjunct's desperation. Oh yes, she is desperate. We are too few. We are failing. That precious thing she found, she paid a price for it. And that price is now proving too high. For her, for the bone hunters, for us.
Spax bared his teeth. Then the mirror did not lie.
The lie is in the faith, sir. The faith that it can win, that it can even survive at all. You see, she is indeed but one woman, a mortal, and her strength is no greater than anyone else's. She has been at war, I now think, all of her life. Is it any wonder she now stumbles?
Spax thought back to that parley, and then shook his head. From somewhere, Krughava, she is finding strength. I saw it. We all did, damn you!
She turned me away.
Abrastel snorted. You feel slighted? Is that where all this has come from?
Highness, Krughava's tone hardened. From the very beginning, I saw myself as the reflection of her faith. I would be her one unshakable ally, sworn to her and her alone, no matter where she would lead us. And I knew that we understood each other, and that as much as I needed her and what she held inside, she in turn needed me. Do you grasp any of this? I was the source of her strength. When her faith faltered, she needed only to look at me.
Krughava held her palms against her face, covering her eyes, and slowly leaned forward. Muffled, she said,
She turned me away.
Spax looked over at Abrastel and met the queen's steady gaze. The Gilk war chief slowly nodded.
You leave me in a difficult position, Abrastel said. Krughava, if I understand you correctly, it is now your thought that in denying you, the adjunct has in effect lost her faith. Yet was this not a matter of disposition? Two objectives, not one, and so we are to be divided in strength. And given the nature of the glass desert...
But Krughava was shaking her head behind her hands.
Do you truly imagine that she believes she can cross it with her army?
Spax loosed a stream of Bargast curses and then said,
What would be the point of that? If she intends suicide... No, her ego cannot be so diabolically monstrous that she'd take all her soldiers with her.
You are yet, I think,
and Krughava's hands fell away as she looked up at him,
to acquaint yourself with the third voice in this eternal argument.
What do you speak of?
I speak of despair, sir. Yes, she would will herself and her army across the glass desert, but she does so without faith. It is gone, driven away.
Abrastel said,
Sincerely as you may have seen yourself as the true and unshakable reflection of Tavare's faith, I believe your conviction that Tavare saw you the same way, in those precise terms, is itself an article of faith. This place of despair where you now find yourself is entirely of your own making.
Krughava shook her head.
I have watched it weaken. I have watched its light fade from the world. And I have seen her desperation. We are too few. We are failing. That shining thing there in her hand is dying.
Tell me its name, Abrastel whispered. This argument of yours. You name one side faith and another despair. Speak to me of what she holds, this failing, dying thing.
Spax turned to Abrastel in surprise.
Why, Firehair? You do not yet know? That which fades from the world? Its name is compassion. This is what she holds for the fallen god, what she holds for us all.
And it is not enough, Krughava whispered. Gods below, it is not enough.
Book 4. The Fists of the World. If there was a better place, would you seek it out? If peace was at hand, would you reach for it? And on this road stand thousands weeping for all that is past. The journey's at an end. We are done with our old ways, but they are not done with us. There is no air left in this closed fist. The last breath has been taken, and now awaits release, where the children sit waiting for the legacy of waste, buried in the gifts we made. I have seen a better place. I have known peace like sleep. It lies at road's end, where the silts have gathered and voices moan like music. In this moment of reaching, the stone took my flesh and held me fast, with eyes unseeing, breath bound within, a fist closed on darkness, a hand outstretched, and now you march past, tossing coins at my feet. In my story, I sought a better place and yearned so for peace, but it is a tale untold and a life unfinished. Woodcutters, Tablet 4, Hethra of Arran. Chapter 11. On that day I watched them lift high. In the tallness of being they shouldered years and stood as who they would become. There was sweat on their arms, and mad jackals went slinking from their bright eyes. I see a knowledge sliding beneath this door, where I lean barred and gasping in horror. And for all that I have flung my back against it. They are the milling proofs of revelation, crowding the street beyond like roosting prophets. And as the children wandered off in the way of gods, the small shape was unmoving at suffering's end. On this day I watched them lift high, tomorrow's wretched pantheon around stains on the stone where a lame dog had been trapped in a forest of thin legs, and the sticks and bricks went up and down like builders of monuments, where the bowls are bronze and overflowing, and marble statues brood like pigeons. Have you seen all these faces of God? Lifted so high to show us the perfection of our own holy faces, but their hands are empty of bricks and sticks now that they're grown. Is there no faith to scour away the cruelty of children? Will no God shield the crying dog on the stone from his lesser versions caging the helpless and the lame? If we are made as we would be, then the makers are us. And if there stands a God moulding all he is in what we are, then we are that God, and the children beating to death a small dog outside my door are the small measures of his will considered, and in tasting either spat out or consumed in the ecstasy of the omnipotent. Children Like Gods, Fisher Keltath. The ramps had been laid out, the crews singing as they heaved on the ropes, columns of black marble rising in a ring around the glittering mound. The dust in Spindle's mouth tasted like hope. The ache in his shoulders and lower back felt like the promise of salvation. He had seen her this day, and she had been better. Still a child, really, a sorely used one, and only a bastard would say it had all been for the good. That the finding of faith could only come from terrible suffering, that wisdom was born on scars. Just a child, damn it, scoured clean of foul addictions. But that look remained there in her ancient eyes. Knowledge of deadly flavors, a recognition of the self lying trapped in chains of weakness and desire. She was the Redeemer's high priestess. He had taken her in his embrace, and she was the last ever to have known that gift. The digging around the mound had scurried up offerings by the bucket load. Tlani Mas, mostly. Bits of polished bone, shells and amber beads had a way of wandering down the sides of the barrow. The great plaster friezes they were working on in coral now held those quaint, curious gifts, there in the elaborate borders surrounding the nine sacred scenes. Spindle leaned against the water wagon, awaiting his turn with a battered tin cup in one cracked, calloused hand. He'd been a marine once, a bridge burner. He'd trained in military engineering, as much as any Malazan marine had. And now, 3 months since his return from Darujistan, and what a mess that had been, he'd been made a pit captain. But as in his soldiering days, he wasn't one to sit back and let everyone else do all the hard work. No. All of this felt good, honest. He'd not had a murderous thought in weeks. Well, days, then. The sun was bright, blistering down on the floodplain. On the west road, huge wagons were wending up and down from the quarries. And as for the city to the south, he turned, squinted. Glorious light. Kurald Galain was gone. Black coral was black no longer. Gone. The Tist Andi had vanished, that red dragon with them, leaving everything else behind. Books, treasures, everything. Not a word to anyone, not a single hint. Damned mysterious, but then what was odd about that? They weren't human. They didn't think like humans. In fact, gods below. From the high palace, from the towers, a sudden conflagration. Swirling darkness that spread out in roiling clouds and then broke into pieces. Shouts from the crews, fear, alarm, dread. Distant cries, raining down. Spindle was on his knees, the tin cup rolling away from trembling hands. The last time, gods, the last time he'd seen. Great ravens filled the sky, thousands spinning, climbing, a raucous roar. The sun momentarily vanished behind their vast cloud. Shivering, his peace shattered, he could feel old tears rising from some deep well inside. He'd thought it sealed, forgotten, but no.
"My friends," he whispered, "the tunnels! Oh, my heart, my heart!"
Great ravens pouring out from the high places of the city, winging ever higher, massing, drifting out over the bay.
"Leaving! They're leaving!"
And as they swarmed above the city, as they boiled out over the sea to the east, 100 horrid, crushing memories wheeled into Spindle, and there took roost. Only a bastard would say it had all been for the good, that the finding of faith could only come from terrible suffering, that wisdom was born on scars. Only a bastard. He knelt, and as only a soldier could, he wept. Something had drawn Banaskar to the small crowd of soldiers. It might have been curiosity, at least that was how it must have looked, but the truth was that his every motion now, from one place to next, was his way of fleeing.
Fleeing the itch of temple cellars, of all that had been within my reach, if I could have known, could have guessed.
The glass desert defied him. That perfect luxury that was a drunk's paradise, all that endless wine that cost him not a single coin, was gone.
"I am damned now. As I swore to Blistig, as I said to them all, sobriety has come to pass for poor old Banaskar. Not a drop in his veins, not a hint upon his fevered breath, nothing of the man he was, except for the itch."
The soldiers, regulars, he thought, were gathered about an overturned boulder. They'd been rolling it to pin down a corner of the kitchen tent. There'd been something hiding under it. Banaskar edged in for a look. A worm, coiled in sleep, though it had begun to stir, lifting a blind head, long as an eel from Malaz Harbour, but there the similarity ended. This one had mouths all over it.
"Can't say I like the look of that thing," one of the soldiers was saying.
"Looks slow," observed another.
"You just woke it up. It crawls by day, is my guess. All those hungry mouths. Hood's breath. We better turn all the rocks in camp. The thought of lying down to sleep with them out hunting whatever."
Someone glanced up and noticed Banaskar.
"Look, that useless priest of Direx here. What, come for a look at your baby?"
Myriad are the forms of the autumn worm.
What's that? A myriad worm, you say?
I've seen the like, Banaskar said, silencing them all. In my dreams, when the itch turns to something that bites, that chews and gnaws, and I can't see it, can't find it, when I scream in the night. That was good advice, he added. Scour the camp, spread the word, find them, kill them all.
A boot heel slammed down. The worm writhed and then uncoiled and lifted its head, as would a spitting serpent. Soldiers backed away, swearing. Banaskar was jostled to one side. Iron flashed, a sword blade descending, slicing the worm in two. He looked up to see Faradan's sort. She glowered at the ring of soldiers.
Stop wasting time, she snapped. The day grows hotter, soldiers. Get this done and then find some shade.
The two sections of the worm had squirmed until contacting one another, at which point they constricted in mortal battle. Someone threw a coin down, puffing dust.
The shorter myriad.
I'll see you on that.
A second coin landed near the first one. Faradan's sort sword lashed down again and again until bits of worm lay scattered, glistening in the white dust.
Now, she said, the next bet I hear placed on anything will see the fool hauling water from here to the Eastern Ocean. Am I understood? Good. Now get to work, all of you.
As they hurried off, the fist turned to Banaskar, studied him critically.
You look worse than usual, priest. Find some shade.
Oh, the sun is my friend, Fist.
Only a man with no friends would say that,
she replied, eyes narrowed.
You're scorched. There will be pain. I suggest you seek out a healer.
I appreciate your advice, Fist. Do I anticipate pain today? I do. In fact, I think I welcome it.
He saw a flash of disgust.
Gods below, you're better than that.
Am I? Nice of you to say so.
Faradan's sort hesitated, as if about to say something more, but then she turned away. He watched her making her way deeper into the camp of the regulars, where soldiers now hurried about, dislodging rocks with knives and short swords in hand. Blades flashed and curses sounded. The exhaustion of this place left him appalled. Shards of crystal borne in screams of pressure, somewhere far below, perhaps, and then driven upward, slicing through the skin of the earth. Looking round, he imagined the pain of all that, the unyielding will behind such forces. He lifted his gaze, stared into the east where the sun edged open like a lizard's eye.
Something, he whispered, died here. Someone.
The shock had torn through this land, and the power unleashed in that wild death had delivered such a wound upon the sleeping goddess that she must have cried out in her sleep.
They killed her flesh. We walk upon her dead flesh, crystals like cancer growing on all sides.
He resumed his wandering, the itch biting at his heels. Fist Blistig pushed his way past the crowd and entered the tent.
Gods below. Everyone out, except for the quartermaster.
The mob besieging Pors, where he sat behind a folding table, quickly departed, with more than one venomous look cast at the clean-shaven man now leaning back on his stool. Brows lifting, he regarded Blistig. The fist turned and dropped the tent flap. He faced Pors.
Lieutenant, Master Sergeant, Quartermaster, just how many ranks and titles do you need?
Why, Fist Blistig, I go where necessity finds me. Now, what can I do for you, sir?
How much water did we go through last night?
Too much, sir. The oxen and horses alone.
By your reckoning, how many days can we go without resupply?
Well now, Fist, that depends.
Blistig scowled.
All the soldiers who were in here, Pors, what were they doing?
Petitioning, sir. Needless to say, I've had to refuse them all. It is quickly becoming apparent that water is acquiring a value that beggars gold and diamonds. It has, in short, become the currency of survival.
And on that matter, I am glad you're here, Fist Blistig. I foresee a time, not far off, when begging turns to anger, and anger to violence. I would like to request more guards on the water wagons.
Are you rationing?
Of course, sir. But it's difficult, since we don't seem to have any reliable information on how many days it will take to cross this desert. Or rather, nights. Hawes hesitated, and then he leaned forward. Sir, if you were to approach the adjunct, the rumor is she has a map. She knows how wide this damned desert is, and she's not telling. Why is she not telling?
Because it's too far,
Blistig growled. Lifting his hands in a just-so gesture, Paws leaned back. My carefree days are over, sir. This is now in deadly earnest.
You have the right of that.
Did the adjunct send you, Fist? Have you been requested to make a report on our provisions? If so, I have a tally here.
How many days before we're out of water?
Blistig demanded. At fullest rationing, and allowing for the beasts of burden, about 5.
And without the animals?
Without the oxen, at least, we'd end up having to pull the wagons ourselves. Hard work, thirsty work. I cannot be certain, but I suspect any gains would be offset by the increased consumption among the pull crews.
But that would diminish over time, would it not, as the barrels emptied?
True. Fist, is this the adjunct's command? Do we slaughter the oxen, the horses?
When that order comes, soldier, it will not be going through you. I am prepared to strengthen the guard around the wagons, Boers.
Excellent.
Reliable guards,
Blistig cut in, fixing Paws with his eyes. Of course, sir.
How soon? You are to set aside a company's supply of water, quartermaster. Initial the barrels with my sigil. They are to be breached only upon my personal command, and the portions will be allotted to the names on the list you will be given. No deviation.
Paws's gaze had narrowed. A company's allotment, Fist?
Yes. And should I assume, sir, that your extra guards will be taking extra care in guarding those barrels? Are my instructions clear, quartermaster?
Aye, Fist, perfectly clear. Now, as to disposition, how many extra guards will you be assigning?
10 should do, I think.
10? In a single shift of rounds, they'd be hard-pressed to keep an eye on 5 wagons, sir, much less the scores and scores.
Redistribute your other guards accordingly, then.
Yes, sir. Very good, sir.
I'm trusting to your competence, Paws, and your discretion. Are we understood?
We are, Fist Blistig. Satisfied, he left the tent, paused outside the flap to glower at the dozen or so soldiers still lingering.
First soldier caught trying to buy water gets tried for treason and then executed. Now, you still got a reason to see the quartermaster?
No, didn't think so. Blistig set out for his tent. The heat was building.
She's not going to kill me. I ain't here to die for her, or any other fucking glory. The real unwitnessed are the ones who survive, who come walking out of the dust when all the heroes are dead. They did what they needed to live.
Paws understands. He's cut from the same cloth as me.
Hood himself knows that crook's got his own private store squirreled away somewhere. Well, he's not the only smart bastard in this army. You ain't getting me, Tavaray. You ain't.
Frowning, Paws rose and began pacing, circling the folding table and the three-legged stool. Thrice round, and then he grunted, paused and called out,
Pimblethrop, you out there?
A short, round-faced but scrawny soldier slipped in.
Been waiting for your call, sir.
What a fine clerk you've become, Himble. Is the list ready?
Aye, sir. What did Lord Knockknees want, anyway?
We'll get to that. Let's see your genius, Himble.
Oh, here, let me unfold it. You know, it's amazing you can write at all. Grinning, Himble held up his hands. The fingers had been chopped clean off at the knuckles, on both hands.
It's easy, sir. Why, I've never been a better scriber than I am now.
You still have your thumbs.
And that's it, sir. That's it indeed.
Hawes scanned the parchment, glanced at his clerk. You certain of this?
I am, sir. It's bad. 8 days at the stretch. 10 days in pain. Which way do we go?
That's for the adjunct to decide. He folded up the parchment and handed it back to Himble. No, don't deliver it just yet. The fist is sending us 10 hand-picked thugs to stand guard over his private claim. A company's supply. And before you ask, no, I don't think he means to share it with anyone, not even his lackeys.
Just like you said, sir. That it weren't going to be just regular snivelling for a sip. Is he the first?
And only, I should think, at least of that rank. We'll get a few lieutenants in here, I expect. Maybe even a captain or two, looking out for the soldiers under them. How are the piss bottles going?
Being disturbed right now, sir. You'd think they'd make faces, but they don't.
Because they're not fools, Himble. The fools are dead, just the wise ones left.
Wise, sir? Like you and me?
Precisely. Now, sit yourself down here and get ready to scribe. Tell me when you're set. Hawes resumed pacing. Himble drew out his field box of stylus, wax tablets and wick lamp. From a sparker, he lit the lamp and warmed the tip of the stylus. When this was done, he said,
Ready, sir.
Write the following. Private missive from Lieutenant Master Sergeant Field Quartermaster Paws to Fist kindly. Warmest salutations and congratulations on your promotion, sir. As one might observe from your advancement, and indeed mine, cream doth rise, etc. Inasmuch as I am ever delighted in corresponding with you, discussing all manner of subjects in all possible idioms, alas, this subject is rather more official in nature. In short, we are faced with a crisis of the highest order. Accordingly, I humbly seek your advice and would suggest we arrange a most private meeting at the earliest convenience. Yours affectionately, Pause. Got that, Himble?
Yes, sir.
Please read it back to me. Himble cleared his throat, squinted at the tablet.
Pause to kindly meet in secret when?
Excellent. Dispatch that at once, Himble.
Before or after the one to the adjunct?
Before, I think. Did I not say a crisis of the highest order? Humble squinted again at the tablet and nodded.
So you did, sir.
Right then. Be off with you, Corporal. Himble packed up his kit, humming under his breath. Paws observed him. Happy to be drummed out of the heavies, Himble? The man paused, cocked his head and considered.
Happy, sir? No, not happy, but then get your fingers chopped off and what can you do?
I've heard of one of your companions getting a special leather harness made.
Only one hand was done with him, sir. I lost the shield side in the first stand, and then the sword one in the fourth push.
And now you're a clerk.
Aye, sir.
Hawes studied him for a moment and then said, On your way, Himble. Once he'd left, Hawes continued pacing. Note to self, he muttered. Talk to the armourer and weaponsmith. See if we can rig up something. Something tells me Himble's old talents will become necessary before too long. With respect to the well-being and continued existence of one Pause, humble, most obedient officer of the Bone Hunters. He frowned. 8 at the stretch, 10 in pain. May the gods above help us all. Fist kindly ran a hand over his head as if smoothing down hair. For a brief instant, Lostara Yil found the gesture endearing. The moment passed when she reminded herself of his reputation. In any case, the man's worried expression was troubling, and she could see quiet dismay in his eyes. Faradan Sort set down her gauntlets.
Adjunct? That was a difficult march. This broken ground is pounding the wagons, and then there are the oxen and horses. 7 draft animals have come up lame and need slaughtering. 2 horses among the Kundril and another from the command herd.
It's only going to get worse, muttered kindly. This glass desert is well named. Adjunct, and he glanced at Faradan Sort and then Ruthan Gud. We would speak to you of our misgivings. This course of action could well shatter us. Even should we manage to cross this wretched land, our effectiveness as a fighting force will be severely compromised.
Faradan Sort added,
The mages are united in their opinion that no water is available.
Unless we were to halt for a few days and try sinking some deep wells, very deep wells, adjunct. And even then, well, the problem is that the mages have nothing to draw on. They're powerless. Not a single warren is available to them, meaning they don't know if there's water far down under us or not. She paused and then sighed. I wish I had some good news. We could do with it. The adjunct stood over her map table. She seemed to be studying the lands of Colance, as marked on oiled hide by some Balkando merchant 50 years ago, the notes etched in a language none here could read. We shall have to cross a range of hills, or buttes, here, she pointed, before we can enter the valley province of Estebanz. It's my suspicion, however, that the enemy will reach us before then, either from the passes or from the east, or both. Obviously, I'd rather we did not have to fight on two fronts. The passes will be key to all this. The threat from Estebanz is the greater of the two. Fist kindly, kill all the command horses but one. Request the Cundrill to cull their herd down to one mount per warrior with 10 to spare. Fist Sort, begin selecting crew to pull the supply wagons. Those oxen won't last many more nights. Kindly ran a hand over his scalp again.
Adjunct, it seems that time is against us. In this crossing, I mean. I wonder, could we push the duration of each night's march up past 2 bells after dawn, and a bell or more before the sun sets? It'll wear on us, to be certain, but then we are facing that anyway.
Those wagons that are empty of provisions, Faradan Sort added, could take the soldiers' armor and melee weapons, relieving some of their burden. We could also begin divesting the train of extraneous materiel. Reduce the armorers and weaponsmiths. All of that is more or less in decent repair. The soldiers didn't waste much time getting stuff mended or replaced. If we dropped 70% of the raw iron, most of the forges and the coal, we could redistribute the food and water onto more wagons, at least to start, which will relieve the oxen and the crews, not to mention reducing the damage to the wagons, since they'll ride lighter.
We could triple soldiers up in the squad tents, kindly said.
We keep all the tents and cloth, the adjunct said without looking up. As for your suggestion, Faradan, see to them. And Fist kindly, the longer marches begin, starting this evening.
Adjunct, said kindly, this is going to be brutal. Morale being what it is, we could face trouble soon.
The news of the Naruk defeat helped, Salt said. But the half-day and full night we've just walked have sapped the zeal. Adjunct, the soldiers need something more to hold on to. Something. Anything.
At last, Tavare raised her head. She gazed levelly at Faradan Sort with red-rimmed eyes.
And what, Fist, she asked in a dull voice, would you have me give them? I don't know, Adjunct. The rumors are chewing us to pieces. Which rumors would those be?
Faradan Sword hesitated, looked away.
Kindly, said Tavare, your fellow Fist seems to have lost her voice.
Adjunct, kindly nodded. The rumors, well, some are wild, others strike rather close to the bone.
Ruthan Gud spoke up.
We're in league with the Elder Gods, and you mean to spill the blood of your soldiers in a grand final sacrifice, all of them, to achieve your own ascendancy. There's another one, that you've made a secret pact with the High Houses and the Younger Gods. You will bargain with them using the crippled god. That's why we intend to snatch him, to steal what's left of him away from the Fokrul Asael. There are plenty more, adjunct.
You possess hidden knowledge, said kindly, acquired from who knows where. And because no one knows where, they all invent their own explanations.
But in each, said Ruthan Gud, now eyeing Tavare, you are kneeling before a god. And, well, what Malazan soldier doesn't get a bitter taste from that? What Malazan soldier doesn't know the story of Dasem Ultor? Homage to a god by a commander is ever served by the blood of those under his or her command. Look around, adjunct. We're not serving the Malazan Empire anymore. We're serving you.
In a voice little more than whisper, the adjunct said,
You are all serving me, are you? You are all about to risk your lives for me. Please, any of you here, tell me, what have I done to deserve that?
The tone of her question left a shocked silence. Tavare Paran looked from one to the next, and in her eyes there was no anger, no outrage, no indignation. Rather, in her eyes, Lostara Yil saw something helpless, confused. After a long, brittle moment, kindly said,
Adjunct, we march to save the crippled god. The problem is, as far as gods go, he's not much liked. You won't find a single worshipper of him in the Bone Hunters.
Indeed?
Suddenly her voice was harsh.
And not one soldier in this army, in this tent, has not suffered? Not one here has not broken, not even once, not wept, not grieved?
But we will not worship that, kindly retorted. We will not kneel to such things.
I am relieved to hear you say so, she replied, as if the fires inside had died down as quickly as they had flared. Eyes on the map, trying to find a way through. So look across then, across that vast divide. Look into that god's eyes, Fist kindly, and make your thoughts hard, make them cold, unfeeling. Make them all the things you need to in order to feel not a single pang, not a lone tremor. Look into his eyes kindly before you choose to turn away. Will you do that?
I cannot, Adrant, kindly replied in a shaken voice, for he does not stand before me.
And Tavare met his eyes once more.
Doesn't he?
One heartbeat and then two before kindly rocked back, only to turn away. Lostara Yil gasped.
As you said he would.
But Tavare would not let him go.
Do you need a temple, kindly? A graven image? Do you need priests, sacred texts? Do you need to close your eyes to see a god? So noble on his throne, so lofty in his regard, and oh, let's not forget, that hand of mercy ever reaching down? Do you need all of that, kindly? You others, do you all need it in order to be blessed with the truth?
The tent flap was roughly pulled aside and Banaskar entered.
Was I summoned?
And the grin he gave them was a thing of horror, a slash opening to them all the turmoil inside the man, the torment of his life.
I caught some of that just outside. Too much, in fact.
He looked at the adjunct.
Blessed with the truth. My dear adjunct, you must know by now, truth blesses no one. Truth can only curse.
The adjunct seemed to sag inside. Gaze dropping back down to the map on the table, she said,
Then please, Septok, do curse us with a few words of truth.
I rather doubt there's need, he replied. We have walked it this night and will again beneath the glow of the jade strangers.
He paused and frowned at those gathered.
Adjunct, were you under siege? And have I, by some unwitting miracle, broken it?
Kindly reached for his helm.
I must assemble my officers, he said.
He waited, standing at attention until Tavare lifted a hand in dismissal, her eyes still on the map. Faridan Sort followed him out. Lostara Yil caught Ruthan Gud's eye and gestured him to accompany her.
Adjunct, we shall be outside the tent.
Rest, both of you, said Tavare.
I, adjunct, if you will.
From the plain woman, a faint smile.
Soon, go.
Lostara saw Banaskar settling onto the leather saddle of a stool.
Gods, with company like this, is it any wonder she is as she is?
The high priest pointed a finger at Ruthan Gud as he stepped past and made a strange gesture as if inscribing in the air. Ruthan Gud hesitated for a moment and then, with a wry expression, he combed one hand through his beard and went out of the tent. Lostara fell in behind him.
Are you all right?
Faridan Sort asked. Kindly's expression darkened.
Of course I'm not all right.
Listen, she said. We tried.
You can't ask soldiers to open their hearts. If they did, they'd never take another life.
He faced her.
How can she not understand that? We need to harden ourselves to all that we have to do. We need to make ourselves harder than our enemy. Instead, she wants us to go soft, to feel.
He shook his head, and she saw that he was trembling with fury or frustration. She turned as Ruthen Gud and Lostariel emerged from the command tent. Kindly looked at Ruthen.
Whoever you really are, Captain, you'd better talk some sense into her, because it's turning out that no one else can.
Ruthen Gud frowned.
What sense would that be, Fist? We kill people for a living, Kindly growled. I don't think she wants that to change, the captain replied. She wants us to bleed for the crippled god.
Keep it down, Kindly, warned Faradan Sort. Better yet, let's walk a little way beyond camp. They set out. Ruthen hesitated, but was nudged along by Lostariel. No one spoke until they'd left the haphazard picket stations well behind. Out under the sun, the heat swarmed against them, the glare blinding their eyes.
It won't work, announced Kindly, crossing his arms. There will be mutiny, and then fighting, over the water, and before it's all done, most of us will be dead. Not even the damned marines and heavies at full strength could keep this army together.
You clearly don't think highly of my regulars, said Faradan Sort.
Just how many volunteered, Sort?
I don't know.
Malazan policy is to take the eager ones and make them marines or heavies. The convicts and the destitute and the press ganged, they all end up as regulars. Faradan, are you really certain of your soldiers? Be honest, no one here is likely to indulge in gossip.
She looked away, squinted. The only odd thing about them that I have noticed, Kindly, is that they don't say much about anything. You'd have to twist an arm to force out an opinion. She shrugged. They know they're faceless. They always have been, most of them. Long before they ended up in the military. This is just more of the same.
Maybe they say nothing within range of your hearing, Sort, Kindly muttered. But I'd wager they have plenty to say to each other when no one else is around.
I'm not sure about that.
Have you forgotten your own days as a lowly soldier?
She flinched and then said, No, Kindly, I have not forgotten. But I can stand 50 paces from a campfire, close enough to see mouths moving, to see the gestures that accompany argument, and there's none of it. I admit, it's uncanny, but my soldiers seem to have nothing to say, not even to each other. No one spoke for a time. Ruthen Gud stood combing his beard with his fingers, his expression thoughtful yet somehow abstracted, as if he'd not been listening, as if he was wrestling with something 1,000 leagues away. Or maybe 1,000 years. Faradan Sort sighed. Mutiny, that's an ugly word, Kindly. You seem ready to throw it at the feet of my regulars.
It's what I fear, Faradan. I am not questioning your command. You do know that, don't you?
She thought about that and then grunted. Well, actually, that's precisely what you're questioning. I'm not Fist Blistig, and I dare say my reputation is decent enough among my soldiers. I might be hated, but it's not a murderous hate. She regarded Kindly. Didn't you once speak about making a point of being hated by your soldiers? We are to be their lodestones, and when they see us bear it, when they see how none of it can buckle us, they are in turn strengthened. Or did I misunderstand you?
You didn't. But we're not being looked at like that anymore, Sort. Now they're seeing us as potential allies against her.
Ruthen Gud's voice was dry.
Ready to lead a revolt, Kindly? Ask that again, and I'll do my level best to kill you, Captain.
Ruthen Gud's grin was cold.
Sorry, I'm not here to give you an easy way out, Fist. No, you're not giving any of us anything. What would you have me say? She doesn't want her soldiers weeping or bleeding out all over the ground because they've gone soft. She wants them to be the opposite, not just hard.
He eyed the three of them.
Savage, unyielding, stubborn as cliffs against the sea. In the command tent, you missed the point,